Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to Handbags at Dawn, the show that believes you should never judge a bag by its leather because, much like the women that carry them, appearances can often be deceiving, especially when we're at the school gates sporting giant sunnies over our makeup-free eyes and are so dry shampooed it's solid updo. Yay! I'm your handbagging host, Charlotte Edmonds. Here are some things you should know about me. I'm a TV creative, so I'm very creative. I'm a mum of two, so I'm very tired. And like many of us, I spend a lot of my life wondering if everyone else is really as together and on top of things as they seem. So I started a podcast to set about investigating women's innermost thoughts through the medium of their bags. I found out many things, none more apparent than firstly, women are ace, and secondly, many of us carry emergency raisins. It's a phenomenon, folks. This is the one where we dive headfirst into the bag of an Olympic athlete who's incredibly skilled in the whole diving headfirst thing. It's a Handbags at Dawn first as we welcome an Olympic legend to the show. In 2002, whilst at Bath University, friend and GB athlete Greg Kirk encouraged her to try a run on the skeleton bobsleigh track, and it turned out she was rather good. She pursued the sport, and the following season, after training for only 3 weeks on real ice, qualified for the World Junior Championships and went on to win the World University Games. She was the British number one between 2004 and 2012, winning the silver medal at the 2006 Turin Winter Olympics, taking the European Championship in 2009 and 2011, was the overall World Cup champion in 2012, and became world champion in 2013. This mother of two is now sharing her phenomenal skill and sporting experience with future sporting talent, launching her own performance and fitness training business. I'm totally starstruck as I introduce this frighteningly successful athlete, Shelley Rudman.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to Handbags at Dawn. It's an honour to meet you. You have, for the whole of your sporting career, hurled yourself face first on a sled down an ice tunnel at breakneck speed. How did you get so brave?
I don't think I am. I think it just naturally happened. And I think when you start to do quite well in something, you pursue it.
When you started the sport, did you know you wanted to be world champion?
No. I've always been sporty. I've done martial arts. I've done trampolining, judo, swimming, canoeing. I literally did everything as a child. I believed that I was talented at sport. I just didn't quite know what sport it was. It's so good nowadays because kids have such opportunities to try loads of different sports. And I look around now and you get talent IDs into sports, fast tracks. You can actually go to an Olympics so quickly. It's amazing. Whereas when I was growing up, it was still athletics, netball, football and rugby. And they were really the only sports I got a chance to play unless my mum and dad hadn't have done what they did and they got me doing all other different sports. And I seemed to get on really well with judo and athletics, and it came to the point where both the sports just didn't complement each other. So I was getting little injuries for judo and they just didn't quite work. So my parents said to me, you're gonna have to pick a sport now. Which one would you like to pursue? And then we'll really focus on that.
And what age was that that they said it's time to make a choice?
Probably about the age of 12. I decided to pick athletics because I really enjoyed it and I had lots of friends at the athletics club. And a coach basically said, oh, you look really good for the hurdles. Can I train you and see how far we can get? I really think you're quite talented. And I thought, yeah, okay, I'll give it a go. And within a year, he got me to the English Schools Championships for track and field into the final. So I was really like, wow, I can't believe that. But he really believed in me. And I think because he believed in me, I attended the training and I thought, maybe I can make it. I always wanted to represent Great Britain in a sport, and I really hoped it would be athletics. But I think realistically, I knew I would never be able to go on to a senior standard. I just wasn't quick enough. So when I got involved with skeleton, it was like, oh my goodness, could this be the sport? I had all of the characteristics to suit it. So
what, like,
you know, I was quite quick with my alertness. My body awareness is really good. I'm willing to take risks. I loved ski holidays. We had an earlier conversation about me not liking the cold, which is really true. But as long as I'm wrapped up and I've got my thermals on, then I don't mind it.
How warm is the suit you have to wear?
It's not too bad. Put it that way. You wouldn't want it on during a winter storm or anything. I think it retains a heat for about 5 minutes. And then after that, you get really cold.
When I hear the background of you being incredibly sporty growing up, and then you found this sport, it sounds like whatever sport you'd have done, you'd have won it. Do you have this desire in you to just keep pushing yourself?
Kind of. I think, although I'm, you know, above average physically, I'm still not above average to the top athletes. Randomly, I was at Bath University visiting my friend Greg, who you mentioned earlier, and he had got into the sport skeleton, and I'd already met a load of the skeleton athletes, and I used to find it really funny. You know, oh, these skeleton athletes.
What do you mean?
I just thought it was a really unusual sport, and the fact that it was called skeleton bobsleigh, I thought was really funny. And it was only through a bit of banter with my friend Greg going, yeah, you know, let me try it, let's see what happens. But it was after we had had a night out in Bath, and he had to train the following day, and I said, oh, I'll come up and watch and I might have a go. He said, yeah, come up and have a go.
That is a hell of a way to clear a hangover.
I was watching him train and I thought, you know what, I'm going to have a go. And I did. And I thought, oh, that wasn't too bad. And it went from there. But I literally took every opportunity that came my way with that sport. There was a group of military men that said, do you know what, we're going over to Norway. Do you want to try and get on our military ice camp? And I wasn't in the military at all. A fortnight later, I was on a bus going over to Norway with a load of military personnel and just thinking, oh my God, what am I doing? What am I doing?
Make a decision, think later.
Yeah, I'm quite impulsive and I do lots and lots of research. Then I'll park it for a while and then all of a sudden I'll just go.
That sounds a really good analogy for your sport.
That is.
So what makes someone good at skeleton bobsleigh?
I think you have to have an instinct to be able to slide. You see a lot just bang their way down for many years and you think, right, maybe it's time to hang up the spikes.
What's the split between being a daredevil and the physical appropriateness of your body?
I think with the sport, you need to be able to push yourself and you need to have that sense of, right, I'm going to do this and see what happens, that nerve to, you know, challenge yourself and maybe get a faster line, or unfortunately sometimes not fast lines, and then you do come out on your side. But generally it's quite a safe sport.
I love the way you sort of say that, safe, and you come out on your side. What's happened to you in the past?
I have had a few accidents, but I've managed to keep my sled for most of them. The curve can sometimes spit you out with the centrifugal forces and you may corkscrew out, so you might come out on your side, you might come out on your back, or you might literally go left to right and ping pong out. It's basically being able to handle that and correct it for the next run so you don't make those errors again.
How frustrating is it to be in a sport where you can't actively stop somebody else doing really well? One of the things as a viewer, you watch the brilliant time and then it must be so frustrating being in that first position and watching somebody else just shaving a millisecond off. How do you cope with that?
You get to the top and you try and run faster or have a cleaner race, or you alter your equipment so you can change the bow in the runners, and the runners are the bars which are in contact with the ice. So basically they're like the tyres of a car which interact with the ground, and so with our runners, the more bow we put into the runner, obviously the less or the more contact we have on the ice. So we would change that element of our sleds. Quite similar to Formula One driving.
And it's a sort of similar danger, risk, but if you get it right, oh, you get it right.
Yeah.
If you look at it on the face of it, it doesn't look like as much of a technical sport, but it obviously is. But your sled is extremely important. There's two stories I read about you, both of which I adore. When you were preparing for the Winter Olympics in Turin, your community all raised the money.
They raised money for me to help with equipment for the Olympics. I already had the sled, so lots of extra pieces of kit. Because the sport wasn't well funded when it was that Olympic cycle, it allowed me to get my own room and really, really focus prior to big events, and I could just completely go into my own little bubble and prepare better. And it was brilliant. I can't believe they did it. Even now, it's just incredible. And it really, really did help. Just that simple gesture that they believed in me and and they thought, you know what, you're doing really well, let's give you something to help your performance and help you get on your way. And I was actually in with a good chance of qualifying for the Turin Olympics, and it was really hard. So I was working full time, and after my job I was going to training in Bath, so it was an hour there, an hour back, and just trying to juggle everything and perform and try and keep my life ticking along. And they realised that I was making all these sacrifices, and they thought, you know what, we're going to help you and we'll do a sponsored canoe race. And lots of people in the village contributed, and so it was just brilliant. The whole media and support around that whole event was amazing, and I didn't really understand the extent of it until I went out to Turin, because I was still in my little bubble. And then I just got all of the press going, oh my goodness, do you know that your village are doing this, isn't this amazing, and everybody's at the pub watching your runs, how incredible is that? And I just couldn't believe that everybody was at a pub watching my races live.
What do you think it is about sport that is so uniting?
I think people connect with it, so they connect with the emotions, they'll have connections with the athletes as well. So they may come from a local village or a local town near to people. You may know somebody, it could be a family member. I think the fact that most people have played either football or they've ran, they can connect with that world really well, and they appreciate, wow, this person's really doing amazing things. And I think it's good that people love sport.
And actually, I mean, you obviously have loved sport your entire life, and many people, when they talk about the sport they used to do, they say, I did this while I was really good at that, but I gave it up because it was just too much that I had to give up to do that. A lot of girls give up in their teenage years when they discover relationships, and some girls give up when they don't want to look sweaty. The way you describe it is that it's extremely social. It sounds like you had a blast with all of your fellow competitors.
Yeah, I loved it. I really, really loved it. And I've just had my second maternity break, and I do miss that whole environment, because you do, you meet some amazing friends, you get to travel the world, you get to push yourself, which I think is really important. So no matter what you do in life, you will always have to go for a job interview or put your CV on someone's desk or hit certain targets. And I just think sport is a really, really good way, when you're young, of preparing yourself for that as well. But it's also a really social, really healthy thing to do as well. Very good for your mindset too.
So you and your fiance are a match made in heaven, because you're both athletes, and he's an engineer, mm-hmm. and he's designed you an uber phenomenal super sled. Is that mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Has that given you the edge?
I think it definitely allowed me to test equipment before it was released. So that was really good. We could completely talk shop, and I could be really honest to say, that's not working, or that was really, really good, let's use that for this race. Or he would say, no, let's hold it back and use it for this race, because that's a bigger impact. So between us, we could negotiate and help each other on the track as well.
You're very mature to be able to do that. My husband and I can't agree on, I don't know, a paint colour in B&Q. We have a massive Barney. So deciding potentially my future sporting career based on a design, this would be too much for us. You're obviously a match made in heaven. A lot of women, after they have children, totally lose their nerve in terms of risk-taking. You didn't, did you? Did you ever have a wobble once you'd had your first daughter? Because you got back on the ice. Didn't she used to cheer you on?
She did, yeah. She was amazing. I think I always wanted to compete in front of my children. So if I ever had children, when I was younger, I thought, wouldn't it be amazing if you went to a really big event and your kids were able to actually watch it? And as soon as I had Ella, I just already had a plan to see whether I could get back, but I didn't know whether it would be possible. So I just thought, you know what, let's just see. The sport did put really, really big targets on me to get back quite quickly.
How quickly?
Quite quickly.
Like weeks, months?
Like weeks.
Weeks!
It was a lot of pressure. We had to have quite a lot of negotiations to kind of tame that down a bit, because I had to have knee surgery as well 2 weeks after Ella was born, because it just made sense to put everything in that rehabbing period rather than wait, rehab from pregnancy and then have a knee surgery and then rehab from that. So that was why I had to do all the timing that way.
By the way, that's the first time I've ever heard anyone talk about the post-pregnancy time as rehabilitation. That's a sporting term, but let's all start using that, everybody, because that's what it feels like. Slowly getting back to normal.
Yeah. Well, your body's changed, your centre of gravity's been working in a certain angle for a number of months, and you know, your ligaments are flexible. So there's so many physiological changes that go on with a woman mentally. You've got the whole tiredness factor and, you know, endorphins, and just everything's going on in one go that you just need to take time out and rehab like you were an athlete coming back from an injury. It's not an injury as such, but it is a massive life-changing factor.
Well, although if you hadn't had the child but you were experiencing the post-pregnancy symptoms, if you went to the doctor, they'd probably hospitalise analyse you. Yep. But they go, yep, that's all normal. And you go, seriously? This all is normal? Yep, nothing to worry about here. Oh my God. Your sport must be pretty strict because you're having to lie down on your front and you're not even allowed to do that in bed when you're pregnant. No. So when you found out you're pregnant, did you have to stop straight away?
I continued training. I limited certain exercises. So obviously I wouldn't be on my back. When it got to a certain point in my pregnancy, I wouldn't do, you know, heavy weightlifting or heavy loading, although I did keep up quite a lot of dumbbell work and the Swiss ball work. So I definitely kept my definition. Towards the end of it, I got quite tired anyway, so I just literally backed off. And I felt really good, actually. But with Sophia, my second child, I had quite a lot of pelvic issues, so I backed off my training quite a lot with Sophia. You shouldn't necessarily stop exercising as soon as you fall pregnant, because actually all the research and everything out there just shows that, you know, to keep active is really beneficial to both you and baby or babies. As long as you monitor it and get really good advice from the doctors, you can't really go wrong.
When they equate childbirth to a marathon, when I was going through it, I'm like, oh, I see why. And so, yeah, you've got to stay fit.
Yeah.
You sound like you're giving some brilliant advice here. Now, is that why you've decided to go into more of a training capacity?
Yeah, I think it was a natural progression. So I've always coached people. And even though I've been competing, I've always tried to give advice, coach adults, coach kids. And because my daughter's at school now and I still like to have that bit of flexibility. So I just thought, you know what? If I set up my own business, I've got so many skill sets to offer people, from postnatal training to a high standard, even just keeping fit. That's why I set up my company. So I'll be doing personal training, performance training and the health training. And the health training is more like obesity management, doctor referral, postnatal, all of those aspects.
So you don't have to be a potential Olympian to be able to train with you?
No, not at all, no. Although if you did want some advice, I'm able to offer that as well.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
What's it like as an Olympic athlete in the run-up to it?
I think as it approaches to an Olympic Games, it becomes really hard because it does become a bit of a pressure cooker. And from our sport, nobody really monitors it that intensively until literally 3 months prior to the Olympics, and it becomes a real hotbed of press just wanting your attention. And it's quite unusual because before that, you're pretty relaxed. You can go to events. You won't have film crews there. Running up to an Olympics, you'll have sponsors. We want to film you. We want to do this. And so you do it knowing that, okay, this will have a bit of an impact on my preparation.
It's astonishing with an Olympic Games, isn't it? You have to hit it right once every four years.
Yeah.
And whereas you have more consistency in competition in the Europeans, in the Worlds and in the national championships, how hard is it to plan your strategy to hit that fourth year?
I think it's incredibly hard. And it's only as I've done more Olympics that I've just thought, you know what? It's not the be-all and end-all if I don't do well in this Olympics. Don't get me wrong, I'm going to try as hard as I can, but there is just so much emphasis on an Olympic medal, and if you don't win it, it's almost like you haven't done well. And it was really prominent to me in London 2012, and I watched so many athletes disappointed because they hadn't won gold. And I just thought, oh my goodness, you are there representing your country, and you actually got to the Olympics, which is so hard anyway. You've represented your country and you've done as well as you have. And I just thought, I don't want to be like that if I get to another Olympics. I really want to enjoy the whole experience and come away going, oh my goodness, okay, maybe it wasn't the best result. And Sochi for me definitely wasn't, but I had the most incredible experience. And I think that to me almost dampened the blow of not performing as well as I could do, because it's really hard in our sport. You connect with tracks or you don't. And if you don't, it can be really terrible and not really a true calculation of what you are as an athlete. I mean, I usually rank top 6 in the world. Generally, I'm not really off the podium. And at the Olympics, I finished outside the top 10 in Sochi. And I just thought, oh my goodness, that's not really a true reflection of me as an athlete.
When you came back, what was the process you had to go through to get over it?
For me, the biggest one was Vancouver. So I was in amazing form in Vancouver. I went into Vancouver. I was just flying. I was ranked 2nd in the world. I was so fast on the start, just starting to connect with that track, which I found really, really hard. I had a terrible run into it. There was a death on the track, literally 24 hours before we started, and I was spokeswoman for the team, and I found that really hard. Deep down, it really, really affected me, because I got targeted for bringing Ella out, and everybody was very like, oh my goodness, you're going to compete, and you've got your daughter coming out. And I still had to remain positive, because we all had protocol to follow. I found it really difficult, so I wasn't really in the best frame of mind when I went there. And also, when I was doing track walks to track and really mentally prepare myself, we had camera people following us to try and capture us on curves where, you know, the fatality was, and it was awful. I think I put a bit of a shell up around myself, but deep down I was thinking, I don't really want to be doing this. But I continued. My first run was disastrous, and I was all over the place, and I finished so far behind everybody, and I just thought, oh my god, I've blown it. And it was just really upsetting, the fact that you spent 4 years and it was just awful. And then I corrected it for the next day, and then on my final run I finished fastest. I just missed the medals.
Oh.
I nearly set the track record, and I just thought, oh, that's sod's law, I've done it on the final day, on the final run.
But isn't that, as an athlete, isn't that more of an achievement to start off not in the greatest place, but somehow find it within yourself to improve to that degree? I mean,
it was one of those double-edged swords, like, yes, I could do it, but it would have been amazing to have got a second medal. It wouldn't have been gold or silver, but it could have been a bronze. I went away going, oh, I just can't believe that. And it was a really, really horrible time for me, but I just thought, I cannot finish on that note. I've got to go for another. I want to become the world champion now. I know I can do it. So that was basically my fire to go, right, let's do this now. And I did, and I come back so strong from that. So although it was a rubbish time, I bounced back so much stronger. And then when it came to Sochi, I was completely ready.
When you're in that sport with these incredible world-class competitors, do you have to remind yourself where you came from to get to there?
Do you know, it's where I meet people that aren't in the sport that I realise, okay, wow, you know, we've been part of something really special. Or if the Olympics are on the TV and you see the Olympic flame and you think, I was part of that whole experience, how cool. When you're in it, it just is so normal. I mean, there's such a lot of enjoyment with the sport, and you have such a good family within the sport itself. So all of the athletes were really, really friendly, and there's real good atmosphere when we're all travelling together, and people love that. It's a real like spit and sawdust type sport. It's not glamorous when you're doing it, but when you're outside of it and you go to events and things, it can be quite nice, and that's probably the glam bit of it.
Well, the glamour connection is a perfect moment to talk about your handbag. So we have it here in between us. What is this handbag and how would you describe it?
Do you know, I wasn't really a handbag person until my partner bought me a handbag for Christmas, and then I was like, oh, I quite like that, that was very nice, thank you. But this was literally a handbag that I picked up from holiday because I needed an open top handbag that would let sand out.
Oh, I love that. This is so practical. It's basically a sieve.
It is basically a sieve. It's a Ralph Lauren sieve.
That's the nicest sieve I've ever seen.
Actually, I bought it and it doesn't really let the sand out.
It's a ventilated bag anyway.
Yeah, it's a ventilated bag.
So, shall we have a look inside for your first item?
Okay, my phone.
Ah, so why is this significant to you?
because I have to carry it everywhere with me. When you have children and they go to school, you just never know whether there's going to be the call to go to the school. I just like to be connected, but I love taking photographs. So whenever there's a photo opportunity, my phone is out taking snapshots. I love scenery and sunsets and sunrises.
Photographs of your kids, photographs. Yeah. Isn't it great? People always say, don't they, when you've had kids, never forget a day, cherish every moment. And then in the next breath, they go, oh, parents today are always there taking pictures. And you go, you know what? Pick a side. You know, I don't know why I need to take 10 to 12 pictures of exactly the same moment. Yeah. What have you been taking pictures of recently?
I have been taking pictures of my daughters playing because it's such lovely weather now and we've been going on loads of country walks and it's just been fantastic.
Are you a very countryside person?
I do both, really. I really love to go back to the country, but I like to dip in and out of the city and have fun. So I like to go to a couple of bars and have a bit of a party.
Can you do that as an athlete? Can you let your hair down?
Oh my goodness, yeah. Our after parties with Skeleton are brilliant and I think everybody really looks forward to them because everybody's so tired. But once we get out, it's just such a good party and everyone dances.
Is it like après ski, but Olympic?
Yeah.
Oh,
it's brilliant. Oh, it's so good. I really miss them.
Are you finding it hard to not be part of that competition scene?
I'm not actually, but it's really difficult when you see everybody compete and you think, oh, I love that track. Oh, I wonder where I would have finished on that. But I still feel as though, you know, I could get back tomorrow and maybe perform well. I think that's always going to be there.
Well, it sounds to me like you're incredibly fit and you're still training.
I'm trying. It's hard some days, but I do try and keep relatively fit.
What's your routine?
At the moment, I'm literally just going on little runs, doing little circuits.
Since you've come back to this area, how's your life changed? Because you moved back to where you grew up, didn't
you? Yeah. So it's been really interesting. So it's completely different to...
A spider is threatening me. It's smaller than a fingernail, but I don't like the cut of his jib.
Do you want me to get rid of it?
No, I'm brave. If you can go down ice tracks face first, I can sit next to a spider. Don't make it jump on me. No. Let's not do that.
They got a butterfly.
Ah, okay, butterflies.
Welcome to the country.
Yeah, no, I love it. Oh, why do butterflies come near me? I don't care for your beauty. What's happening? What next? A rhinoceros? But this butterfly that's interrupting us, I once took my children to a butterfly display in a beautiful greenhouse, and there were ones the size of pancakes flying at your face. The children nearly had seizures. It wasn't relaxing. Why do people like to put themselves through that? Put them in an environment further away from my face and we can enjoy them from there. You know?
You know you're going to get hunted now by the butterflies coming in.
My best friend's a butterfly expert. There aren't many of those. And she thinks I'm weak. I am. About many things. Butterflies being one of them. Other things I'm all right. But anyway, things that could actually hurt me. Snakes, horses, not frightened of at all. Not frightened. Tiny things that are just pretty. And very silly. Very silly. So country life. The country life that is in my hair. You're enjoying being here with your family?
Yeah, I just like to be able to get out and literally walk the dog and not have to put the dog in the car and drive to the country. So I really appreciate that.
What's your favourite way to unwind?
Sunbathing.
It's so opposite to the career you chose.
Yeah, I do like just chilling out. I think once you've had children, you don't get to do that often. So when you do, it's like, right, my moment is now. Just leave me.
I do like magic. I don't like wizards.
What else can we find in your handbag?
This is a bit random. Some antibacterial hand sanitizer.
Talk me through this.
Basically, when you're an athlete, you do not want to get ill. And the easiest way to get ill is by hand-to-mouth contact. So we have been just completely blitzed with wash your hands, use the hand sanitizers wherever you go in public spaces. If I am in a public area, I literally will carry this and just use it, particularly in the underground.
That is a close environment, isn't it?
It is,
and then someone coughs and it doesn't matter how many evils you give them, that isn't enough to propel the germs away from your face.
As an athlete, it's just your worst nightmare if you get ill before a major event, if you're on an airplane or something like that. It's just so convenient to just, you know, use a hand sanitizer. It's quite good for the children as well, actually. I do use it quite a lot. Not like
obsessively.
I don't use it obsessively because you do need to get a few bugs in your system.
Have you had an experience of illness at competition?
Yeah, I got played for literally 3 years where at the end of every World Cup race, I would get the flu.
Ugh.
And it happened 3 years in a row. The first year was against a German slider and I could have clinched the overall World Cup title. I had flu and I competed and I was just so, so poorly. I just literally led on the sled and I came second. But it was
You still came second?
Favourite track. I was second in the overall rankings. And then the following year, it happened happened again. And then the following year I had it again and it turned to bronchitis and I was up in the mountains and that was horrible because I could hardly breathe. And then the year after that, I strained my back the week of my final World Cup. So I'm second. I kind of learned that I needed to boost my immune system at the end of a season.
That is so frustrating to do all that training and get that far.
Yeah.
And be ready and then get flu.
Yeah.
What did you do to help you get the best performance? Is it diet, sleep, hydration?
For me, a big one was sleep. If I don't get a good night's sleep, I'm not the same athlete. I am a 9-hour sleeper. I think with all the nervous energy that we go through, the sport is quite taxing on your nervous system. To get a lot of sleep, it really, really does help with your performance.
What would you say to somebody who's wondering if they could get into high level sport, whether it be your sport or another discipline? What advice would you give?
I would advise to pinpoint what sport you would like to get involved with. And if there is one that you think, yeah, do you know what, that could be really good for me, find out what the criteria is to try and get onto a development squad. So a lot of national governing bodies, they will have criteria on their website to say, we are looking for talented athletes who can achieve XYZ or have certain attributes as a person, or even contact them and ask, just say, look, I'm really interested in doing this. What do you think? The other way is work your way up through that sport. So get in there as a grassroots sport and start to work your way up the ranks, because if you are good, it will be highlighted and you will go up there quite quickly.
When you're at school, you do a lot of sport. Everyone does. A lot of people don't like it, but you're encouraged to do sport. When you're a grown up, left to your own devices, a lot of people don't anymore, do they? But taking up a sport, and even if it's not to an incredibly high level, gives your life incredible purpose and focus and structure, doesn't it?
Definitely. It's quite incredible, actually. The people that didn't do sport when I was at school, or they were quite negative about it, they're actually doing it now. It's really interesting. Lots of them are getting fit and they're out road cycling or running and doing lots of the charity fun runs. I think that's really great. Just makes me think, like, what wasn't quite working for them when they were at school? There must have been some connection there that was missed. In some ways, you can't help it because you are limited with what you can teach in a certain amount of time. So a lot of schools now do dancing for girls because they find that the girls actually really like dancing and it's a good way to keep them active. Even bowls, Ella does fencing. They're niche sports to mainstream schools, but within that sports body, they're big. There's a load of girls near here and they all do roller skating competitively. You just think, wow, you know, there's something for everybody.
I always wake up early. I've got chicken in my head. That says cockamadoodle do.
So this is the sound of someone telling us we have to move on to your third and final item. One more rumble in the bag.
Okay, it's going to be a bit boring, but it will be my wallet.
It's very pretty in pink.
I do like this colour pink. My phone cover is this colour as well. Fuchsia.
This is a stylish wallet. Dare I say it, it's a bit bulging. Do you pop quite a lot in there? Or are you incredibly rich?
This
receipts.
I think the first. This is receipts, aren't they? A pain.
They're a pain. And also receipts, loyalty cards. I'm so loyal to everyone.
Me too.
I have 15 coffee companies that I'm loyal to.
Yeah, no, this is, well, it was a lot of cash until my little daughter raided it and emptied it, but it's mainly cards. It wouldn't pop closed. That's how big it got.
Are you an organised person?
Yes and no. I go through stages where I go, right, I'm having a complete blitz and everything is completely meticulous, but then all of a sudden it will go complete carnage. My car, for example, if I've been on a road trip, the girls, and I think you'll know this as well, they just completely make a mess of it, and I do in the boot as well, where I've got clothes in and out, bags in and out. It will stay messy with things that I need to clear out for maybe a week.
A week? Oh, that's not bad. Really a week? Honestly a week? Maybe
ten
two?
Days.
10 days. Now we're getting somewhere. I start convincing myself that I'm being a better parent for having a messy car because I am prepared.
Yes.
If I need broken breadsticks, they're all here, you know? If I need a magazine that has had juice spilt all over it, again, I've got it ready.
Yeah, I've got raisins in my bag, but you didn't ask for those. I've got...
So I love the fact there's a box of raisins. There's always the rogue box of raisins.
Yes.
When I grow up, I want to be faster than Usain Bolt.
Unfortunately, we have to leave it there today. Thank you so
much. Thank you for having me on.
Well, how's your experience been?
It's good, yeah, really good. You've got a really good voice for radio.
Thank you.
But you look like you should be on TV.
Can I keep you? If I loved you before, double it. Now, if people want to find out about the new business that you're setting up and the possibility of training with you, how can they do that?
My website is www.shellyrudman.com, and I've got Facebook, which is my name as well, Shelley Rudman, and I've got Twitter and Instagram, Shelley Rudman.
I'm sure you're going to be inundated with people wanting to mimic a fraction of your success. You're really inspiring. Thank you for talking to us.
Thank you.
I can't help you with any of your training needs, but get in touch anyway. We'll have a gas. I'm at Handbags Podcast on Twitter and Instagram, and Handbags at Dawn on Facebook. Thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye.
now?
Yeah, you can.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.